State of the Empire is presented by the Nerdy Show Podcast Network, geeky programming for all nerds across the multiverse, and is brought to you in part by Consequence of Sound, the web's foremost source for music and film news, reviews, and insights. All Nerdy Show programming is made possible by A Comic Shop, Orlando's number one comic shop and nerd destination, and with the generous support of listeners like you. To learn how you can support this and other fine geek programming, visit nerdyshow.com.
This is Sam Witwer, and you are listening to Nerdy Show.
Welcome to State of the Empire, Star Wars speculation podcast where we look for news in Alderaan places. Hi, I'm Cap.
Hey, I'm Doug.
Hey, I'm Matt.
I'm Colin.
And this episode is something a little bit different. You'll recall in our previous episode, we mentioned that Colin went on a special journey.
I did. A journey to watch the Clone Wars animated series.
Yeah, you watched all of Clone Wars and all of Rebels back to back.
Yep.
Now, sure did. I've never watched Clone Wars. Doug's never watched Clone Wars. It just wasn't interesting to us at the time. We were very much...
I've watched like an episode and a half, and I was like, eh, it's not for me, but that's not...
That honestly was my exact assessment when I had started it. And I had actually started it beforehand and then dropped off and then spill... Well, actually, once the announcement that Clone Wars was canon became... like that they had wiped out all of the expanded universe and that Clone Wars was one of the things that was saved and was canon, I decided that, well, I can actually, you know, handle that now. So I'll go ahead and watch it.
You took one for the team. Now, Matt, you're a Clone Wars fan.
Yep, I've been through twice. Once as it was airing and then once I watched it all the way through last year.
And you openly admit that there's some high highs and some low lows.
Yeah, it's you know, it goes up and down because it's not season long story arcs. They serialize it very heavily. They're supposed to be like old war propaganda films. It's kind of interesting in that way. But
that, I mean, that is,
but
that
it
is
will, but it will suffer because of that as well as have highs because of it too.
Before we get going, Colin, you did some kind of thing to generate our Star Wars names.
Yeah, I work at a theater and we had a Star Wars camp, and one of the things that I had the kids do was create their Star Wars names. And first word is your title, and that's based on your first initial. And then we have your first name, which is created by taking the last three letters of your last name and then adding them to the first two letters of your first name. And then your last name is based on your second initial. So I am Senator.
Of course.
Go to hell.
Sanko Organa.
Sanko Organa?
How'd you get that?
So you're clearly Alderaanian.
Yep.
You're like the Imperial Senator who's a... This is the Imperial Senate. You're not good enough for the Galactic Senate.
It's true. I'm not. all right, Cap, this is yours. You are also a senator.
Oh, lucky
yes,
me.
Yes, you are Senator Ardkanita.
Ardkanita. All right.
Yeah. Sounds Star Warsy, yeah.
Yeah.
Spill, you are Acolyte Ilma Unduli.
Acolyte, what does that make? What does that mean?
Sith Padawan.
Oh.
Yeah, but... And, so I'm related to Luminara, though.
Good for you. Doug...
Oh, no.
You are Boss...
Oh, boy.
You are Boss Nixdu Nida.
Nixdu Nida?
Yeah, Nixdu Nida.
I did a Star Wars generator back in college, and, uh-huh. I still use this name occasionally as a screen name for things. It was based on first name, last name, mother's maiden name, and city you were born in.
That was the exact same one. Yeah.
It was Spima Alfor.
That's pretty good.
I like that. Mine was Bando Loaded.
I like that one. That is, yeah. You're shooting first.
Yeah.
that's
pronounced
cool.
Fast. It sounds like you're saying load it. Yeah. But it's not uh-huh. spelled the same way, but yeah.
It's pretty good.
I keep the name Bando. We use Bando for because it's close to Lando, and you know I'm cool with that.
Yeah, why wouldn't you be? Well, all right. So, Colin, I've been catching wind of every now and then your reactions on this journey, and I'm pretty fascinated by, you know, what you've learned there, because you came into it with as much skepticism as Doug and I have had on this. And even though it's pronounced canon now, I'm fine just having Matt tell me things, because it's really charming and insightful when he does it, but I sure don't like it when George Lucas does it sometimes. So.
Yeah, y'all, I mean, honestly, it's... The first season's rough. Even the first two seasons are rough. I mean, how many seasons is this thing, Spill? Six?
It was either 5 plus the lost missions or 6 plus the lost missions.
Yeah. So it takes a really long time to get into. And honestly, I was not really able to binge watch it because I couldn't watch it.
I'm just going to, I'm sorry, I'm probably going to do this a lot and step in real quick. But I think it is one of the hardest shows to possibly binge watch because it is so heavily based on individualized 3-episode arcs, then 4-episode arcs that have nothing to do with anything that you saw in the 3 episodes prior.
Yeah.
You know, they're all very serialized, like, you know, part 1 of 4, part 2 of 4, part 1 of 3.
So they're like tiny films?
Yeah. And, then they focus on different characters. So sometimes you might not see Obi-Wan for half a season because we were doing a Plo Koon and Anakin story, or we were doing an Ahsoka and Barriss story. So, like, it's not a show, I think, meant to be digested all at once. It's meant to be a show digested as, you know, at the cliffhanger. Tune in next week to find out what happens to Ahsoka as she hangs off the cliff.
So it's not the kind of show where you could say, hey, only watch these 10 episodes and get the gist of it.
Nah, correct.
It would be more like watch these 5 serialized arcs in different seasons. Mm.
Yeah. I mean, there's some really, really good stuff in this. And honestly, I am a better Star Wars fan for watching it, and not only just by, like, not like in the sense of putting myself through it, but in terms of, like...
You're such a martyr.
Yeah. No, in terms of, it has helped inform the way that I should feel about the characters now that this is truly the canon and the backstory of what these characters are going through, and like what is happening with Anakin and Ahsoka specifically in Rebels. If you are watching Rebels, you need to watch Clone Wars. Truly. I the end of the season finale of this second season of Rebels touched me exceptionally, like it cut deep. And like I was in tears at the end of that episode, and I do not think that I would have been had I not seen Clone Wars.
Well, I was very impacted by it, but I was not in tears, so maybe you're right. And actually, you saying this makes me realize that we said we were going to offer our reactions to the end of season 2 of Rebels in our last episode, and actually didn't end up doing it because we were running over time so much. So we'll have to put that behind the blast doors in this episode. Mm-hmm. So stay tuned for that. Thank you, Colin.
Yeah. No, it was I think
that goes to the serialized nature. If you watch Clone Wars, if you didn't even watch Attack of the Clones, you just went through Clone Wars, then watch Revenge of the Sith, you would get that feeling, because Anakin is in over the course of Clone Wars is as true blue of like the fucking hero that the Republic needs. Like you know that he's a celebrity in the Republic. Like he is the guy on the front lines that is gonna win us this war. And then after 6 years of that, to watch Revenge of the Sith and see it all fall apart, and see also towards the end of Clone Wars, he's dealing with stuff like Ahsoka and just like the war not going the way they want it to, where you see how he can, how it all falls apart for him more so than you do than Attack of the Clones to Revenge of the Sith.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, like it truly. Through even when you get into the original trilogy and et cetera, the journey of Anakin Skywalker is so much more fully fleshed out in that show in a way that really gives you an insight into the depths of that character and what he's feeling. I mean, so much more so than, you know, because you're left at the end of Attack of the Clones and the Revenge of the Sith, like that journey of him becoming who he is, to be Darth Vader is so, it really is well illustrated through this show. Unfortunately, it is a six season show where there are really great parts of it and really not great parts of it. I mean, there are some very, you know, those first parts of Rebels where it was, it felt like they might've been pandering to the kids and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Take that and put it at an exceptionally high level, and that's Clone Wars for most of the season.
And once again, I think it's the serialized nature because there were so many different creators of each individual block, You know, they place directors in charge of each one, and like, you know, the tones could be so different. And there is no season arcs. Like, you don't get towards the end. They did do a thing where like the Darth Maul arc would start with the first two episodes of the season, and then they wouldn't conclude them until the last two episodes. So like, you do get an overall arc in that you're waiting to find out, but it's not like they're showing you what Maul's up to over the course of the season. Mm. They're telling other stories in between.
Which makes sense as to why they were able to, after the series was canceled, compartmentalize so much with their expanded content, like doing the Darth Maul Son of Dathomir comic and also the Asajj Ventress novel. Because those stories, not only were they already written, but they were so compartmentalized that they could exist outside the series.
Yeah, and it's very clear in each one. I mean, Sons of Dathomir is a four-part comic, and it was supposed to be a four-episode block. And it's just, you know, it's just storyboarded onto the Dark Horse comic pages. You know, it's...
Weird. Well, Colin, I mean, when experiencing this, you've gained a lot of insights into characters. For starters, you can care about Anakin, which is an achievement in and of itself. Ahsoka is a character I've come to enjoy a great deal as an adult, but as a child, when I first witnessed her in the trailers for the Star Wars Clone Wars film that was released in theaters, or somewhere, when I first saw her, wherever it was. And she's given R2 some shitty nicknames because R2's already a nickname. and just being like an obnoxious child and weirdly, you know, and being inserted into continuity, having never, ever been referenced. I found it difficult to swallow, and that really turned me against Clone Wars to a greater degree than I already was at the time after my extreme prequel fatigue. What was it like, encountering Ahsoka for the first time, and how exactly did they introduce her? Like, how exactly was it that Anakin, as new as he was able to get an apprentice at that point?
I honestly don't. Spill, do you remember how that happened? I honestly don't remember. I just remember her just being there.
Well, he was in the middle of the Battle of Christophsis, and they sent her to him. I mean, I think it's just thing. If you're a Jedi Knight, you're capable of having a Padawan, and that's the thing too that I think you get in the prequels is you kind of see Anakin as a mistake-prone Jedi, whereas Clone Wars presents him much more as, oh, he was an exceptional Jedi.
Yes. Yeah, and that his teachings are actually do have merit, and that, like, some of the things that he was saying, you know, because you are introduced to this other character named Barriss, who is a Padawan that is the same relative age as Ahsoka, and essentially the same track of training in terms of how far she has gone through the practices of the Jedi, and they are constantly talking about how Barriss is describing her master's teachings, and then Ahsoka's talking about her master's teachings, and really different philosophies of approach and how to deal with a certain situation, and just gives further insight onto some of, through Ahsoka, like what Anakin was teaching her and what his personality was like, and that it's not necessarily the wrong decision, and it's not necessarily more often than not, it's the riskier decision. More often than not, it's the more heroic decision. But more often than not, it's also the decision that is made from passion that actually ends up saving more people than what of the other more cautious decision would have done. He is seen as a hero because he saves more of his, he cares about his squad, he cares about his troops, and because of that, he is respected as a leader.
It's also nice. I think the prequels presents Anakin as hot-headed but mm-hmm. gifted, and that just
mostly because people tell you he is.
Yes.
You very seldom see it.
Yes. And I think that plays off as just being very shallow when it's just such a tropey story by now where it's just like, oh, you know, it's Kirk in the new Star Trek movies. Everyone keeps just telling you, oh, you got the gift. But he's just like, I mean,
but he doesn't.
Yeah. He keeps failing and they keep giving him chances. And if you just watch the prequels, that's the way it is. But Anakin, over the course of the Clone Wars, and Ahsoka, like, it's funny because Ahsoka initially comes off as childish but gifted because they tell her, you know, that she is. But Anakin and her bounce off each other so much that they end up being an exceptional team that becomes disciplined, but yet they're still, they're not ruled by passion, but their passions make them heroic and courageous and a symbol of hope in this otherwise dismal war and everything, to the point where that it almost makes Palpatine's exploitation of Anakin and Ren and Sith that much more effective, because he's the first one to effectively take advantage of those passions, as opposed to constantly setting up clues in the prequels saying, oh, it's going to be his fall. It's going to be his fall.
And you actually see the manipulation of a younger Anakin in the Obi-Wan and Anakin comic book, which is also really well rendered, between like Palpatine kind of seducing the young Jedi with justice, with being able to like fight corruption, within the Senate and so on.
It is so much more effective from a storytelling standpoint to take advantage of a character's strengths as a way to seduce them than it is their weaknesses. And I think the prequels did it from their weaknesses. Like, you heard it in Obi-Wan's voice in A New Hope when he talked about Anakin, that he was like this great Jedi, this amazing, other than like a pretty, daring rescue at the beginning of Revenge of the Sith, he wasn't that effective of a Jedi in the prequels.
Right.
And I think Clone Wars does a much better job, and also doing the same thing to the Jedi Order, making them effective and heroic as opposed to, kind of the Duncey situation they're in the prequels.
Right. And also too, like, you really get that sense of the friendship between Obi-Wan and Anakin, like where they are, they do have some, Obi-Wan is constantly like, come on, man, why'd you do that? You didn't have to do it that way. But that sense of, and he was a good friend, that Obi-Wan says that, like, you see that in the Clone Wars, you really do. And, they did an excellent job in that relationship. And it's such a weird thing, Doug. You're talking about like watching a couple episodes. You don't get it in, you're like, oh, you, if you watch this episode or these five episodes, you're going to get the Obi-Wan Anakin friendship. You're really going to see that like shine through. It's little bits and pieces that are scattered throughout these six seasons, that in that serialized style, you're not really going to get a ton of heart or depth, but when you do get it, it's in little bits, and they're really important, and they're really kind of special.
Some of those serialized bits are just slapstick comedy. I mean, they have like tributes to like Looney Tunes in there.
Like, I kind of like, it sounds to me like, for me personally, I would rather watch a fan edit of like the hand selected best moments, or like, oh, pick these, three story arcs and then skip this one.
I think that would be the most effective, because I think
what's the machete order of the Clone Wars? Right. You know what I'm saying? What's the best way to go about that? Especially when you're telling me that there's ones that are out of order and stuff like that. I'm just like, you know what? That sounds all well and good, but I don't have the time to sit through six seasons of a show that half is, not that cool, and the other half is like, well, you got to wait for it, but there's a good nugget in there,
I mean, some of it too is like, effective just from a format standpoint, just for like, there's arcs that are dedicated to like very specific, like there's the separatists, I guess, whatever you want to call them. They have a super weapon, which is essentially like a giant EMP thing that they can fire. And it's the Malevolence, and like all the episode titles are like Shadow of Malevolence, Wrath of Malevolence. And like, they're very, very Flash Gordon, like kind of things going on, and like in that regard, presenting that to children, they do a really good job of showing that sort of older style. But then you have ones that are like a siege on Geonosis that is just straight up Saving Private Ryan. Like, it's nothing but it's just the siege on the planet to retake that planet, and it's just hard warfare with like troops dying in lots large bunches, but the action's so intense that it's overwhelming for the whole half hour. And then like, they had an Apocalypse Now type, like going into having like the only way to take this planet was through ground troops and putting them on the planet. And then like, it was just all guerrilla warfare from this like local race that supported the separatists. And then like some of the Republic officers were getting like real, like, potentially like, making some really questionable decisions about sending troops in, and the troops are like, should we pull a mutiny? Like, now, like, people are like, that's treasonous talk. And like, they're so they're so different in tone. It's not like Rebels where you can, you know, you can watch like a story arc progress over, you know, a couple different situations. It's much more like, yeah, here's the Point Rain block. Watch these three episodes. You can sit down and binge those, but then turn it off for a while. And then, you know, like go to a different season and watch these four.
That sounds so problematic.
Yeah, but I mean, but I'm interested though. Like if there was a list that say I recommend this order grouped like this, I would check that out. But otherwise, I don't have the patience to sit and just marathon.
Even like a block that you would recommend of, hey, for anybody who wants to see what the best Clone Wars has to offer, what three or four part story arc would you recommend?
Well, yeah, but the thing is that like I feel like those are so much later into the series that it feels like you're not going to understand the gravity of what you're seeing without having a point of reference.
Because if you want to tell me like if the best one for Anakin's mindset, like making him, you know, heroic here, I would probably go with an arc that actually was based on a comic that they adapted into. Is the Slaves of the Republic one. Do you remember that, Colin? When they there's one, and then Anakin becomes like the concubine to like the queen of the slave planet. And of course he's already been a slave, so he's horrified by this prospect that he's like re-enslaved.
Right.
And you know, Ahsoka has to experience what Anakin's been through, and like it's pretty brutal at times. And you know, Obi-Wan, same thing, and like they kind of get an idea from where Anakin's coming from. And so like that's great, but if you didn't watch the progress that Ahsoka had made over the years into maturing, I wouldn't necessarily think that block is the preeminent block that you should watch. Mm-hmm. So I could probably make a list. Like, I think Colin and I could probably
Beginner's Guide to Clone Wars.
Like, yeah. I'm sure people have done similar things, but if you guys did it, I would really trust it. If State of the Empire could publish a list of like, hey,
here are 10 essential or top 10. Yeah. I think we could do that, Colin.
Yeah, I bet we could boil it down. I mean, but that's also too, like, you know, there are things in there that I would probably put in there that you would hate.
Probably. You know, I mean,
yeah, I mean, because there are episodes in this series that like are really, I mean, the whole idea of the Force Ghost and how to overcome death essentially like is really well explained in the Clone Wars.
No shit.
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Which one? You're not talking about the Mortis trilogy, are you?
I'm talking about, well, where Yoda goes to that.
Okay, that's Lost Missions. That's fine. I was worried you were talking about the Mortis one, which was billed as a huge thing, and I despised it. Although the Expanded Universe incorporated in Luke's era really well.
What is it? I'm curious.
They encounter this, was it an object in space? Or they just black out in space?
Yeah, I think... I'm not...
They black out and end up in this sort of, like, extra-dimensional area.
Which is basically, like, the pure force.
Essentially, just a very strange planet where only three living beings are living on it. The father, the son, and the daughter. And the son is the sort of embodiment...
I thought you were going to say the Holy Force Spirit. I was going to be like, no, we can't go
and
there.
This idea came from George, apparently, which concerns me. But, like... And it's not even that bad because a lot of people just took it immediately. Oh, the son is the embodiment of the dark side and the daughter is the light side. But that's not really what it is. It was more like the son was more the embodiment of like power and passion. And the daughter was the embodiment of like enlightenment and serenity and meditation and that sort of things.
And compassion. Yeah.
Yeah. And then the father was just sort of the, you know, the I guess the living force. And like Anakin being there, like they brought him there as the trial for him of the chosen one. And essentially like over the course, things happen to throw the force out of balance between the three because of the presence of them there. And like they end up having, you know, they come into conflict. There's some deaths. There's some resurrections. There's some crazy shit that goes on. This is like some weird ass Greek mythology shit going on. Like not even Greek. It's just like some real cosmic mythology on what the force is. And then, you know, no more, you know, no spoilers they're not spoilers anymore because it's been out for years. But when all is said and done, they wake up in their shuttle like nothing's ever happened. And they just lost like a few hours, according to the troops that come to pick them up.
Uh-huh.
And only those three remember it happening. Or Anakin remembers it happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But they also at the same time though, like it's revealed because we were talking about in the previous episode about Force Premonitions. Like it is in that episode where it is clear. Is that revealed to Yoda or is that in that other episode? Because they're very similar. That like you see the shadow of Darth Vader. Like you see the mask of Darth
Vader. And actually in both of them. When Anakin loses control of himself in Mortis, at one point when he makes a strike with his lightsaber, it's Vader striking. And then like Yoda does see Vader in his vision quest, like about figuring out. That's the one that Liam Neeson actually voiced Qui-Gon.
Wow.
That episode is awesome.
Because
that episode
originally
is awesome.
Revenge of the Sith, there was a scene with Liam Neeson, his voice communicating with Yoda on Polis Massa and introducing himself and being like, yo, Yoda, like I've found out, you know, very convenient timing. I figured out, you know, right. You know, everlasting life and let's do this, you know, but much better, you know, it was cut and that disappointed me back, you know, way back in 05. But doing it in Clone Wars where Yoda's been doing it for a few months now is much better. Also, Yoda goes to the Sith home planet.
Corbon?
Moribond.
Oh.
Because Lucas decided to rename it.
Oh.
Yeah. And
charming.
I know. And even though it looks exactly like Corbin. and he does meet
Tatooine, Dantooine, what the fuck? I don't know. Whatever. Just get it out of the typewriter.
You know, Yoda meets the Force Ghost of Darth Bane, voiced by none other than Mark Hamill.
It was Mark Hamill's return to Star Wars.
It was amazing.
Darth Bane, he was good. Oh, that was so good.
Yeah, so there's things worth watching.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an entire four block story arc of a Imperial trooper that has a malfunction with his chip and he starts to figure out, you know, the order, you know, Order 66 and the conspiracy
and everything else. Yeah.
And it becomes the code name they gave it was the, or actually it might have been one of the episode titles too, is the Jedi Who Knew Too Much. And it becomes like a spy thriller, you know, so they do things
and,
in different
and
tones.
That is what led into what was Captain Rex and his crew being able to be in Rebels, right?
Also Ahsoka leaving the Order, too, kind of. Because that was her first disillusionment, was the Republic's heartless disposal of, you know, of this, you know, trooper. And then, you know, there ended up being some terrorism plot, and she got very disillusioned with the way the Jedi Order was going, and she left, and unfortunately canceled too early in one of the unfinished episodes, the ones that were just the animatics.
Mm-hmm.
Anakin, which Colin, you should watch those, are on YouTube. Anakin, there is a moment in the middle of their mission. The rest of the mission is just okay. This is kind of interesting, not really. Where Obi-Wan sees Anakin looking pensively and starts to ask him about Ahsoka and how he's feeling about everything. And Anakin is emotionally just ripped apart by Ahsoka leaving.
Mm-hmm.
And it really plays into Revenge of the Sith way better than the whole Padme pregnancy business. I mean, it really does. It's just, I think that was just the straw that breaks the camel's back in the new canon.
Yeah. I mean, it explores really interesting ideas, you know, through this show, like specifically about the clone troopers and like, are they individuals? Do they have souls? Are they, does it make sense to save their lives? Are they tools? You know, like what is their role and who are they? And it's really quite interesting, and especially when that episode that you're talking about, Spill, where they remove the chip, like some of them remove the chip once they find out what's happening. It's really cool because the troopers themselves are starting to like name themselves and have different personalities, even though they themselves, it's you know, there's infighting between the clones themselves of like, no, we are all the same, versus other ones are. Even though we look the same, we are not the same. It's a really interesting look at like the nature versus nurture and experiential learning.
And it's cool, as the show kind of graduates and continues on, you start to sense Anakin becomes much more relatable to the soldiers themselves instead of the Jedi Order, because he himself was a slave and they are slaves. You know, like there's no way other way of looking around.
They don't choose
it.
What they do.
Yeah.
They just get ordered.
They were literally bred for it.
This is why I love hearing you talk about this, because you take all the
you
best
make it
parts.
Sound really great.
Yeah. No,
it sounds so good.
You both have this perspective of where I'm like, oh man, that sounds like really good. But then it's like
it's so inconsistent.
Yeah, but then I think about the 2.5 episodes that I saw, and I'm just like, just was very
like there's a 4-parter where Ahsoka, like, she goes to a long time Tales of the Jedi planet, Onderon, and she, they send her to go. They're like, well, unfortunately, they're not a Republic world. We can't help. Like, we can't step in with the military, but we're going to, we'll help their rebels as long as.
Anakin, Ahsoka, Civil War.
Well, it's mostly like, we'll send you down there with some supplies. Go teach the rebel cell
how to fight. Yeah.
You know, how to fight. You know, something that we would actually
like the Mujahideen.
Exactly. and it's very much what it is. And the thing is, it's a really good by itself 4-part arc. But like, I don't know how much that, other than maturing Ahsoka,
right,
how much that did for the whole series. Yeah. So it's just very inconsistent, because sometimes you're just like, we were getting somewhere before, and now you slowed me down because you. Mm-hmm.
I really, if you guys can do that list, I would love to see that list, because it's still on Netflix, right? All of it.
Yes.
Yeah, and now with the with the partnership with Netflix, Rebels is probably gonna be on there soon.
We can pick and choose, you know. So like this is a journey, at least abbreviated, that you know Doug and I and the listeners who haven't done this yet could go on, you know. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it might need to be a little more than 10. I mean, like
just your opinion on what I mean. I know you started this by saying you need to see it, but I'm like, I ain't got that time. Ain't nobody got time for that. If you could just give me even half, even if there's like, if you say, okay, here's 3 seasons worth.
I think the first thing, Colin, is I can break it down into like the actual story arcs and also like what the one shots were, because you could probably, even though there's some one shots that I did enjoy. You could probably eliminate every single one of them.
Mm-hmm. I want to meet the only there one, are, one of the there things are that definitely have to get on there though is the what's that, like, oh man, he's like the spider general,
Admiral Trench.
Oh, he's so good.
Yeah, Admiral Trench has popped up like 2 or 3 times in the new canon, like in the books. Like, they'll mention Trench as like the greatest admiral of the Separatist fleet and stuff. He was cool.
Yeah, probably one of like my favorite villains in Star Wars.
Yeah, I wish I could do that. And voice. Like this, that would be the voice I'd like to learn.
The smuggler, was it Hondo? The smuggler,
Hondo. Yeah.
Hondo's cool, but you meet him in Rebels.
That's the thing. Like, you see him in Rebels. I remember we were at Celebration and people were like, "Yeah!" And I'm like, "I don't know who this guy is, but he seems all right."
Hondo is so not the Hondo that he used to be. Like, the whole thing about New Hondo is he's a broken shell of what he was.
Yep.
Like, he was the great pirate. He was the great pirate lord.
He was a pirate king. He was
he was the pirate king. He bested Sith Lords and he bested Jedi Masters and all these things.
Oh wow.
And now he's just
holy shit.
Like he's a con man that can't get anywhere now.
Damn, that's interesting. Because like the whole thing, I'm just like, he just seems like an older, scrappy guy that has just been living this exact same way for his whole life. Mm-hmm. But now you're telling me no, he was actually a number one kingpin. Is
oh,
like,
yeah.
Damn, yep. That's interesting.
Oh, he was more connected and more well supplied and better defended than Jabba.
Wow. I mean, than Jabba.
Oh, yeah, totally. Oh, yeah.
He was great.
How the mighty have fallen.
But yeah, no, some of the one shots are great. There's a one shot, a Jar Jar Binks one shot that I actually own the figure from that particular, where the Separatist droids dispatched to a certain planet because a cloak falls on Jar Jar. Like, and then through a series his usual antics, like things blow up, the droids are convinced that they have a Jedi in their midst.
Oh my!
And so they're trying to kill this Jedi, and he keeps on like bumbling things up. But the whole thing is obviously,
I already told you, he's force sensitive. So this whole thing is basically true. They are dealing with something that's beyond.
So the episode's called Bombad Jedi, and the figure is called, you know, he is the Bombad, you know, Jedi. And
I'm gonna have to watch it just for this episode to put it into the Hard Truth
update. It's so obviously a,
because it's canon now,
a send up of slapstick, like Looney Tunes, Merry Melody cartoons. Like, you could tell it was just like a love letter. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I love that episode. It's like my favorite individual episode just for content purposes. But it's a terrible episode.
But is it like when Laurel and Hardy would get like flour on them and people think they're ghosts and shit?
Like these droids, like they're convinced that they have a Jedi in their midst. And at the like by the end, they're just like, we give up. Like they can't best this stupid Gungan. And also, but the thing is like halfway, like it's not just him fucking up. It's also Padme taking advantage of that fact and then like sort of pitting the separatist envoy like against that, you know, thinking that it's cleverly done and you know it's cute and I actually think the cloak draped over him was very adorable. So like, you know, him faking being a Jedi.
Yeah, I mean it's also too, like, you know, you mentioned the whole Ahsoka thing, and I still contend that Ahsoka has to die. Like she just has to. But
you have to.
We
all gotta die sometime.
You leave Soak out of this.
Yeah, and I understand why people, you know, are so obsessed with her character and how much she, you know, because they grew up with her and all that kind of stuff. And I completely understand that. And I
grew up with Han Solo,
but she did give. I truly, and I'm serious. I really don't think that people should be watching Rebels. I mean, like, you get it, you understand it, but, like, you really should not be watching Rebels if you have not watched The Clone Wars. Like, there are so many deep-cut references. It would be like watching Empire without watching A New Hope. And
see,
I'm serious.
See, Colin, but I'm going to throw this out there. The first Star Wars movie I ever saw was Empire. Like, okay. Like,
no,
I mean,
like,
you can still...
like I said, you would enjoy it. You'll enjoy it, but will you get everything? No,
not everything, but there is a universality to things. Like, I think that's why Star Wars works.
I mean,
so well.
I feel that my feelings don't go as deep as yours do because I don't have I haven't you know spent the time on it. But I still like the gravity of it isn't wasted on me. You know, like, and I guess maybe is this a good opportunity?
Well, I mean, the whole thing is you watched out of I saw Episode 4 in New Hope before I ever saw Episode 1. So you know, it's like
I mean, should we open the blasters here and talk about like the Rebels finale, since that's what you
may
know,
as well. Let's go to it.
Let's get into it.
Open the blast doors. Open the blast doors.
We opened the blast doors, and Colin, he went spiraling out through the blast doors. Turns out we're on a forest moon of some kind.
That's right. Yeah, the forest moon. Yeah. Yep.
With fucking crickets. They grow them big there on Endor. So we're going to talk about Rebels now and our reactions to everything surrounding the season finale of season 2. Man, it was incredible. It was Darth Vader and Ahsoka finally face off, and
they
do it on Malachor, which is a big deal for reasons addressed in the spoiler section of a previous State of the Empire. It was very impressive. I was absolutely all about the whole thing, and the fact that Kanan is now like a blind Jedi, like satisfying that whole trope of like the blind kung fu master.
Do you think he's going to be permanently blind?
I do.
Yeah, especially Dave Filoni on May the 4th tweeted what looked to be a mask. So it looks like that might be what he's wearing.
Wow.
Mm.
Yeah. Looks partially designed kind of on the Jedi Temple guards, which is an interesting, you know, with that sort of revelation from previous episodes that the Inquisitor used to be a temple guard.
Yeah.
Like,
Now is he going to be blind, but he's going to use the Force to see, so he's basically not blind? You know, like, is he going to be, that's the thing, like, he's going to be Daredevil in the
he's
Star
Daredevil.
Wars.
Yeah. Blind warriors are hot right now, so I think that'll work. And, what a great, great finale. I mean, that is where the Clone Wars stuff really punctuated. I mean, there was, and then to bring back the voice of Anakin from Clone Wars to when Vader's mask is you know, piece blown off.
Oh God. And she's like, I'm not going to leave you. I'm not going to leave you again. And it was just like so poignant and perfect. And, God, that cut me to the core. Oh, that part cut me to the core so, so greatly, because like, you know, they were fighting and the rebels were, you know, the team had to leave, and, Ahsoka could have had a chance to get out of there, but no, she stuck around to stay with, and not with Vader, but with Anakin.
Cut you deeper than it cut his helmet.
Oh my God, it's so good.
I mean, but I mean, okay. So now we're behind the blast doors. So like, where does that leave Ahsoka?
I don't know. Like you see her wandering off into the darkness. There, apparently not dead.
And great, they're making her face her. I don't know if I want to call them mistakes yet to leave the Order, but you know, to face, at least face the repercussions. Like, she couldn't just walk away from her responsibilities. You know, she now, you know, is faced with the consequences of them, because it can be argued via Clone Wars that she is partially responsible for, you know,
the fall of Anakin Skywalker.
Fall of Anakin. So we have an Ahsoka book coming out in October that is going to fill in the gaps between, I guess, Revenge of the Sith and her reappearance.
That's
on Rebels.
Hugely important. Who's writing that?
Someone I was happy to hear. I know that doesn't sound.
I'll look it up. But yeah. I mean, like, you were happy. Basically, the fact that you were happy to hear that,
yes,
that's
very
important.
Happy. It always scares me when you see a character-centric thing. I know that hasn't been the case, obviously, with all the Marvel runs, because, you know, they've just been giving us weird series that I you know, none of them have actually said much about them. Lando's was great, but it just, actually, Lando's was great because it kind of makes Lando into the Lando we know in Empire.
Right.
Chewbacca, inconsequential. Princess Leia, not inconsequential, but not good. And then...
3PO.
I haven't read that one yet.
That one, it's overall, I guess it's inconsequential, but it was still really good. It's just one little nugget, like one good story.
Another thing that we mentioned in the last episode, actually, was the 3PO comic, which is, if you want to read it, it's going to be in the hardback edition of Shattered Empire that comes out this summer, and it is great. It is worth the price of admission for even bothering with Shattered Empire.
That's great to hear.
We were making fun of it, like, who cares about the freaking red arm? Then you're like, oh. Well, that was good.
I feel it's the single best issue of Star Wars published by Marvel since they reacquired.
Amazing.
Holy shit.
I can't wait.
Wow.
Yeah. It is so good.
I would find it hard to argue that. And I was the biggest champion of the Lando comic. So, yeah, it's hard to argue against that.
I mean,
so,
Lando's the best story, but that's the best single issue.
Yes, definitely. I would, yeah, by far.
So I always get worried when they, you know, announce series is based on characters, because, you know, sometimes it can be their death. And, you know, the Han Solo comic, like, you know, they've already talked about how his death has sort of influenced, you know, like, where the direction they wanted to go with it is. And then now the Ahsoka one. I do think Ahsoka will eventually die, even though I don't want her to. But I also think this means that Ahsoka's in for a large transformation. Mm. And what I fear about that is that she will eventually return as some sort of...
Fallen Jedi thing?
Fallen, yeah.
Or as Snoke, perhaps?
Oh, stop it.
By the way, it's by E.K. Johnston.
Oh, that's
and,
right.
And the book's just called Ahsoka, and it comes out October 11th.
October 11th. Order through Nerdy Show.
Yep. Damn straight.
I can't imagine she comes back the same, because I don't think...
But how could she? I mean, she had a feeling that Anakin was the one underneath.
Oh, she knew.
You know,
she knew.
But she truly understood that he was there, like that he existed, and that he was still in there. And but God, his face when he like just scrolled in his eye, you could see the rage in his face of like how he felt about her, and that he made the choice that he was going to kill her. You know what I mean? Like God, it's just so good. And guys, you don't know what you're missing. You really don't. You don't know what you're missing by not having had the previous experience to see that. You know what I mean? Like, I really, God, I can't stress it enough that it's really worth it. It's worth it. It's worth it. And I didn't, honestly, I did not think that was the case until I saw the end of season 2 of Rebels.
Interesting. So you were like, that was an enjoyable experience, but then seeing the season 2 of Rebels, you were like, it was all worth it.
Oh, without a doubt.
Huh.
I mean, the return of fucking Darth Maul. I mean, like, all of that stuff is all through Clone Wars. I mean, like,
Maul was really well done, by the way. That was great.
Yeah, which I mean, started towards the end of Clone Wars, and they actually, like, I mean, that wasn't, that's, it's funny that character was never actually done the justice he deserved until Clone Wars. You know, it's funny, the only other piece of Darth Maul media prior to that I ever enjoyed was actually not a story that took place from Darth Maul's perspective. It was a Darth Maul book, but it was Shadowhunter, in which it was from the focus of two people being hunted by Maul. So he is a threat rather than, you know, like the actual, you know, so, and so that was good and a good characterization of him. Like, instead of just being with him, he's, you know, whatever. But like the Clone Wars show, like, he actually gets some fucking character arc. I mean, it's yeah, good stuff. And I mean, really, like, a master manipulator, it looks like, in this. Like, he worked in, when he was talking to Ezra, he works in the Sith code from the old, like, lore, the, like,
yeah, you know, the rule two and all that. Yeah,
well, not just the rule two, but also like the, you know, your passions will set you free, and like breaking your chains. Like, he works it into a normal dialogue. Like, as he's talking to him, he actually recites the Sith code to him in his actual dialogue. So it's like
Ezra would never suspect that this is anything but good advice.
Exactly. Like, yeah, he's feeding like all four lines to him as separate.
And
like,
Ezra says, he's like, I trust him. Why don't you? Yep. You know, it's like, Jesus Christ, kid, you met him like an hour ago and you're already like seduced by him. You know?
And then when you know, he reached out his hand to him to grab him, and you're just like, no, Maul's not going to do it. And you're like, no, Maul did. He's like, that was the final, like, I think.
He's got him now.
I will say, yeah. Kanan probably like relented a little too much on, and so did Ahsoka, on just being like, all right, fine, enemy of our enemy, you know, like teaming up with Maul.
But I but at the same time, like, this guy has been left in obscurity for, you know, years.
According to Clone Wars, he almost brought the whole thing to its knees.
If you think about it though, Spill, like, in the Clone Wars, like, he was in the shadows. Like, Darth Maul was not one of the ones, like, he was the one who was running the show, but he was mostly the one who was dealing with the Mandalorians and trying to make that whole situation happen. But
Ahsoka was well aware of all that.
Yeah, that's okay. That is true.
I mean, Maul killed Obi-Wan's lover.
Yes, he did. He did.
Very tragic. But, thing.
But yeah, and then, you know, but they, and also too, like, you know, in one hand you hold the gold and in the other hand you're holding the shit. Like, with Clone Wars, you have this
is that
really
an old saying from the, is that an old Sith saying? One hand you hold the gold, the other hand you hold the shit.
Yeah. You know, in one hand, you know, it's just like, cause you have that stuff with Darth Maul and it's really great. And that's, I mean, that stuff, I mean, at first it's like, oh, really? This is what we're doing. And then it's good. But then you have all of this stuff with his brother, who has the worst name in Star Wars, Savage Opress. Oh God.
I remember when it was announced, I was there. It was awful.
It sounds like a joke.
You could hear the eyes rolling.
Yep. Oh, it just sounds like a joke. And it's not great. And like, but like the stuff that they explore through that is good. You know, they're dealing with the witch, like the witches of Dathomir, and like they're dealing with Count Dooku, and Savage is Count Dooku's apprentice. And so it's like apprentice against apprentice at times. And it's a really interesting, it is an interesting story arc. You have to like put those bits, you know, you could probably get a paragraph, or maybe like if you watched an hour of it instead of watching, you know, I don't know, 5 hours of this story arc, you know, cutting it down to an hour so that we would actually, you know, get the good bits of it. But I mean, like seeing Darth Maul in Rebels, I was like, oh fuck, I thought they fucking killed, oh shit, that's amazing. Because at the end of it, he's fighting, him and Savage Opress are fighting in one of the coolest lightsaber battles that I've seen, including Duel of Fates. I guess Darth Maul is just involved with all the coolest lightsaber battles. With Emperor Palpatine in Clone Wars.
Yeah, Palpatine versus Maul and Opress was actually, that was very cool. And then in Rebels was, other than the helicopter blades, not a big fan of that.
Liked them. I thought they were fun.
They don't make sense. And I would have been
okay seeing one, but I was like, they kept doing it.
I'd be okay with one if it just slows their fall, but to have it lift them in the air, it don't make any goddamn sense. I'm sorry. It just, I believe the magic of the force is one thing,
they're constantly force pushing downward.
Then why do they have to have a lightsaber? Like, why do they have to have it spinning?
Well, that keeps them aloft. It keeps the hover.
No,
and then, you know, the force push is like the rudder. You know what I'm saying? Oh, yeah.
It also makes them a giant fucking target hanging from a bright glowing beam of light. It's like in a dark cave. Where should we shoot them? I don't know. Like the big flashing propeller coming at us. It's like, come on, get the fuck out of here. Oh, it's ancient Sith training.
I do wonder what the, because like you guys, I was like, whoa, can they do that? Weird. But you guys' reaction to it was way more immediately, no, yeah. No. And so I'm wondering, you know, how did that decision get made?
Yeah, very.
Could it work as a toy? Yes or no? And then boom, that's it.
Really cool to introduce a new Inquisitor in the finale. Yeah. Sort of just like, you know, hey.
There's more. You don't know how many there are.
Exactly. And I think it's really cool that, like, he's in the midst of an investigation. But, you know, like, he's in the middle of it.
Here's the probably, like, of all the tumultuous things that happened, like, the biggest shocker to me was they killed the Seventh Sister.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see that coming a mile away. Because, I mean, they have her doing live Jedi shows at Hollywood Studios every single day. And it's great. And they fucking killed her.
Yeah.
Wow.
Darth Vader dies.
Who's the one that lands the blow on the Seventh Sister?
Was it Kanan or was it Maul?
I think I'm pretty sure it was Maul because he was like, "Fuck it, I'm killing them all." God, he's good.
I just can't wait till the next season when Maul is like. I hope Maul sticks around like a lot as like a potential mentor that he's trying to steal away. You know, Ezra, to where Ezra's torn between who do I follow? Do I follow this guy who's making a lot of sense, or do I stick with Kanan, who I've been loyal to? And Darth Maul could be like, well, you know, you follow him. It's the blind leading the blind. And, like, he fucked up.
And I would love to see a situation in which, like, they're all reunited and kind in the sense of, like, in Knights of the Republic 2, you kind of had that gray voice that you weren't sure was completely evil in Kreia, and she's like one of the best Star Wars characters ever. And Maul can be that. He can be that sort of gray voice that you don't realize is getting those things in your head to be, you know, like essentially dark side.
Yeah, because he's not Sith. He doesn't like Sith, but he is dark side.
Yes.
You know?
What's interesting is something that they could have done and they could do in the future is the Maul Vader fight that we've all that people have always speculated on.
Yeah.
And now, unfortunately, I mean, they said the right things in that, like, Filoni said they didn't just want, like, if, you know, because people asked them about it going into the finale, and I remember him saying in an interview saying, like, we can't just do this because for fan service. It has to make sense of the story, and we can't just, like, what worries me, though, is they're going to try so hard to not
to make
put
it
that
make
battle
sense.
Royale that when it does, if there is a moment that where it would make sense, they won't do it because they're afraid of someone going, oh, boy, they're really pandering now. But it's like there's got to be an organic moment, I feel, where it's almost the finality of Palpatine winning that struggle. You know what I mean? It mm-hmm. almost just like I think there is a purpose in making it seem like the Empire's plan as put in place is the ultimate evil in the galaxy. It's like I think he does have a shot to knock off Darth Maul in a... And not just knock him off, but like fucking dominated his ass. Mm-hmm. As much as I love Sam Witwer in that role, which I just realized because he's voicing Maul again, but he's also voicing Palpatine now too. So he's doing, wow, man, he's a talented guy.
He is, yeah. Man, okay. I guess we'll leave it at that. Unless we have any speculations for where they're going to go with Ahsoka from there, but I don't even know. I don't even know. I mean, what does it mean? What is it like? How do they, you know, how do they survive that? We know they both did, but how and why? And I can't even begin to speculate on where they can go from there. The only story arcs I see, you know, are the what you've been talking about the seduction of Maul, the deception of Ezra, the struggle of Kanan. Those are the real things. And of course, the storylines that we hinted at last episode about the actual, like, real formation of the rebellion and seeing how that ties into Rogue One. And those are the things that are concrete. But when it comes to Ahsoka and Vader, I have no fucking clue.
I don't think we'll see Ahsoka for the first half of the season. I think we'll see her until
after... have a triumphant return.
Until after Rogue One's out. I think the first half of the season will... we'll get us some sort of reset on Kanan and Ezra, you know, like what the result is, the blindness thing, the like whatever. But I think they will leave Ahsoka as a sort of
question mark.
She's in plot carbonite.
Right. Yeah.
And there's probably going to be, once she is out, there's probably going to be some hibernation sickness. But I think
or hibernation sickness. Oh no.
I bet you're going to get, you know, you might get an Ahsoka who, you know, you were talking about how in that animatic of the, you know, the lost season, like I bet you're going to get that same situation with Ahsoka that you had with Anakin. Like you might get an angry, like post-traumatic stress, Ahsoka. I mean, I would love to see that. I don't know if necessarily they're going to go there because I don't think that they've built up her character enough in Rebels for us to like understand that as an audience. I mean, her character definitely has the weight, and they've set up the backstory for a potential for something like that. But I don't know if we have enough in Rebels for us to really have some sort of fall or real deep-seated problems with that Ahsoka has some mental issues with dealing with her old master in that way. I would love to see it, but I don't know if they're gonna go there.
I don't know. There's a dozen things I would want them to do. One of them is I want Ahsoka to go find Obi-Wan. And want her to have a chat about getting back into the fray, and Obi-Wan's like, no, I'm doing my part already, and like I don't think he ever says what he would never tell Ahsoka what he's doing.
No, yeah.
But I do think there is some potential for some good drama in there where she leaves in anger because, you know, like now she, like, I feel like she's either going to feel responsible for what's happened or she's going to feel that she has to put a stop to it. And I think that's going to lead her to her demise or to her, I don't know. But I would like to see a scene between her and Kenobi. That'd be really cool.
That would be cool. But also, too, like, they've opened the Yoda box, too. Like, they've opened that Yoda box where they can, you know, call him up on the Force phone.
I love Ezra and Yoda. Those are, like my two favorite scenes, like, as far as, like, Force stuff. Mm-hmm. Some good stuff.
Just fantastic show. Such a fantastic show. What are you saying, Colin?
I was just going to say, like, maybe standing outside here makes me think about it. But, like, they in Clone Wars, just as an aside, like, they give you reason as to why Yoda's on Dagobah.
Well, what is it? We're behind the blast doors.
It's the best place for him to, because he talks to Qui-Gon and he learns how to, basically he becomes a student of Qui-Gon as Qui-Gon the Ghost. Well, not a fully formed Force ghost as they are now, but like just a disembodied voice. But the Dagobah system is a conduit and a spring of the Force.
Of the living Force.
Yeah.
So that's why it has, you know, hallucination tunnels and so on in it.
And why it's so rife with life there as well. Yeah. Like a swamp is an amazingly rich ecosystem.
It sure is, yeah.
It was actually in the old expanded universe. It was actually very rich in the dark side, which is actually why he hid there, because it was a shroud for the Empire's agents not to find him.
Wow.
And, you know, which by the dark side, there's actually a very specific reason it's a shadow, because it was actually the site of a battle between an extremely powerful darksider and lightsider, in which the darksider ended up dying, but it ended up saturating the entire ecosystem in that dark side.
Wow.
So, but the Nexus conduit thing of light side actually, to me, makes Dagobah feel a little holier as opposed to a hiding place. It's more of a going with the prequel direction that he had to go and meditate and learn more things
and learn what he learned.
Exactly. It is nice that it's a holy place as opposed to a hiding place.
Hmm. Yeah. Wow. That's cool. So, I guess that we'll call it here then. And when Colin and Matt put together the must watch list for Rebels, you will hear about it on State of the Empire, and then also at the State of the Empire Facebook and the Star Wars Spoilers Facebook group, where you should go if you like going behind the blast doors. And remember, State of the Empire and all the shows in the Nerdy Show Network are entirely listener-supported. If you go to nerdyshow.com/support, you'll find all the links you need on how to donate to us directly, subscribe on Patreon, where you can help fund the effort for a bigger, better, badder Nerdy Show Network and get all kinds of perks in return, or you can go on Amazon, and any of your purchases, if you follow through our links at nerdyshow.com/Amazon, will give back to Nerdy Show. So more information on all that at nerdyshow.com/support. And if you don't want to involve money, you can always rate and review us on iTunes. That's totally free to do and very, very helpful for us, you know, being the dominant Star Wars podcast in this corner of the galaxy, at least. Taking us out, we got a track in celebration of the haunting laughter of Chewbacca Mom.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
here's another awesome track by Movie Remix Master Eclectic Method. It's called Chewy Tune. Bye, I'm Cap.
Bye, I'm Doug.
Bye, I'm Matt.
Bye, I'm Colin.
Somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way.
Thanks for listening to State of the Empire. If you like what you heard, please rate and review us on iTunes, like and follow us on SoundCloud and Audioboom, or subscribe and stream on Google Play. As listener-supported entertainment, we rely on you to keep this and other shows on the Nerdy Show Network alive by telling a friend or funding the network via Patreon. Any size contribution gets you exclusive outtakes, episodes, and images from across the network, and there's even more perks available. Just head to patreon.com/nerdyshow. To find out how you or your company can underwrite this or other Nerdy Show programming, visit nerdyshow.com/sponsorships. For more podcasts, articles, community forums, and other awesomeness, visit nerdyshow.com and be sure to follow Nerdy Show on all your favorite social networks. If it's geeky, we've got it covered.
So I got another Star Wars joke. What is the worst part about being eaten by a crate dragon?
What is the worst part?
That you probably live on Tatooine.
Nice.
Ayo. Awesome.
You know what? Speaking of Tatooine, I feel like, say, the Empire is Tatooine.
you know, you have like this
wretched
gem.
Hive of scum and villainy.
No, well, that not only that, but it's like you have this like gem of a planet where like all the all these like amazing things happen in it. Just no one knows that it's fucking there.
The Outer Rim.
Yeah, man.